You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, October 6, 2025. Grandpa Dan streaming with you, RadioAlbion.com. It is the Daily Nationalist. It is Monday, so you know what that means. It's time once again for Daily Mail Monday, where we take a look at some keen articles from the Daily Mail after culling, eliminating anything that has to do, most anything that has to do with Hollywood celebrities, the royal family, sports ball talk. It actually winds up making the list fairly short, but we have managed, and we're going to start off with our big story, and this was on national news here. Judge speaks out after her $1.5 million mansion exploded in suspected arson attack after she defied a Trump order. You have to like the insinuation we start off with right off the bat. Like Trump's, her order against the Trump administration has something to do. The insinuation is there. A judge whose $1.5 million beach house burned down after a suspected arson explosion has spoken to the Daily Mail in the wake of the horrific inferno. I have a question. $1.5 million? How much do judges actually make? Where does this money come from? Judge Diane Goldstein, 69, said, "I am all right," when contacted Monday morning, 2 days after her property in Edisto Beach, South Carolina, was consumed by flames. Goldstein sounded cheerful over the phone and said she would be happy to direct you to a court administrator to answer further questions about the fire. The judge was out walking on the beach when the suspected arson attack happened, just weeks after she had issued a decisive ruling against the Trump administration. Second insinuation here. Why does this have anything to do with it? They're obviously attempting to make, you know, have people make a correlation, make a tie in their mind that one thing has to do with the other. And there's no evidence. They haven't even found evidence that it was arson yet. It sounds like it likely was. But I'm sure 1.5 million, since we're going to do insinuation, let me put it this way, because, you know, you ever notice it's different when they do insinuation and when you and I do it? When we do it, we get told, oh, we're being evil and you're insinuating things. You have no evidence. You got to get debunked by the fact checkers. But the media, they can come out and make the insinuation. We have two now, including in the headline, of that her ruling against the Trump administration has something to do with this arson. So if insinuation is the game here, I'm assuming a $1.5 million house was probably pretty well insured. Just, I mean, we're insinuating here. I think that might be relevant. Why didn't the Daily Mail throw that in? How well insured is the house? Thankfully, she was in good spirits. Her former Democrat state senator husband, Arnold Goldstein, jumped from a first floor window to escape the blaze and suffered multiple broken bones. Two others were also hospitalized. Now, when I heard this story earlier, once again, it was kind of insinuated he jumped out of like a second story. How do you break multiple bones jumping out of the first story? I mean, it's like, what, 4 feet? How does that even happen? Authorities are now working to determine what may have caused the four-bedroom, four-bath home to go up in smoke. Several reports said the circuit court judge had received death threats over the past few weeks following her decision to prevent the state from handing over sensitive voter information documents to the federal government. Several reports. This is our source. Several reports. We don't get told where the reports came from, who wrote these supposed reports. But don't worry. She totally received death threats. Never mind the fact that I've never heard of this person. Trump's Department of Justice had requested South Carolina officials to turn over the personal data of more than 3.3 million voters, including names, addresses, birth rates, driver's license numbers, and the last four digits of their social security numbers. Yes, this is to verify that there wasn't voter fraud. And apparently that's how dare you try to verify voter fraud? The decision put Goldstein at odds with the Trump administration, South Carolina GOP Governor Henry McMaster, who filed an emergency petition to appeal the lawsuit and the temporary restraining order on September 5th. Oh, finally, we get this far in the article for them to finally admit that, quote, there is no suggestion of any MAGA length to the fire. So why are we going on about this? What the hell? But Democrat Congressman Daniel Goldman took to X to slam Trump's Deputy Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller, for doxing judges. I'm going to stop right there. Doxing, you're a judge. How do you dox a judge? That doesn't even make any sense. You dox somebody who's anonymous on the internet. A judge is a public figure. Everybody knows, you can go look up who's this judge. They're in this news article. How are they doxing the judge and the Daily Mail isn't with this news story? Look, I mean, let's be real. It's a one and a half. Let's just use some common sense, because I'm pretty, you know, I've got some experience in the conspiratorial theory world here. And I do so without being a lunatic about it. You simply use a little common sense, step back and say, well, we don't know because we don't have the facts. See, I'm willing to say that. The Daily Mail isn't. The Daily Mail is going out of their way to insinuate that somehow her ruling against the Trump administration has something to do with this fire before finally way down here admitting there's no link here. There's no evidence of this. So let's use a little common sense. It's a $1.5 million house. It's in a nice gated community where no one can just go in there. If it is arson, and that hasn't even been verified yet, but let's say it is. Let's just go ahead and work with the assumption that it is. What's more likely? Some Trump supporter who probably has never actually heard of this judge, and even if they have, how many other judges have ruled against Trump? But they picked this judge, somehow snuck into the gated community, got into the gated community without being detected, to set this house on fire while the judge isn't there, but her husband and family is. Somehow this person got into the house without being detected. $1.5 million house in a gated community. I'm pretty sure they've got pretty good security. But somehow somebody broke into the house while they were home and set it on fire. Does that make sense? I mean, really, does that make sense to you? See, when you look at things, you know, quote unquote, conspiracy theories, you're given a picture, a narrative, and you look at it and you say, well, this doesn't make sense. These pieces don't fit. So I believe the way I approach it, so that you don't get off into crazy stuff, because people do that too often, you know, and they look silly, where you don't start just making up pieces and putting a picture together to suit you. You have to take what little you have here. So as I look at this, there's three possibilities. The narrative that's being given to us, which is not given to us, insinuated heavily to us from the Daily Mail, that a Trump supporter did this. Now, I've already said what that would entail, just briefly. Breaking into a gated community, going past all these security cameras or you know, security on site, breaking into the house while the people are home, and except for the judge, by the way, somehow getting in there and starting a fire. Okay, there's possibility number one. Possibility number two, it's just an accident. There was something, maybe somebody left something cooking, or I don't know. But it was just, you know, it turns out it's not arson. It's just, you know, an accident. $1.5 million home, you can almost eliminate, you know, oh, and it was an electrical short or something. But you never know. I mean, her husband might have been down there, you know, mixing, you know, painting something in the basement. If they have a basement, he might have been painting something in the garage and left the paint cans open. Maybe there was, you know, something lit off somehow. In other words, it's just an accident. Or third, it was arson. Well, who would be in a case like this, if it's not a high profile case, if it's arson, fire investigators are immediately going to go and look at the homeowners themselves. That's how it is. You can sit here. That's just how it is, because usually there's the motivation, because it's going to be some form of insurance. I'd be curious if the house is paid for, or if they have a very expensive mortgage, where they're at on their mortgage payments. There's all sorts of things that encourage people to try to go for an insurance payout. So there's your third. It is arson. And if it is arson, you're down to, you know, the scenario, I think, pretty unlikely that someone found this house, snuck in through the gated community, bypassed any security, got into the house while these people were home, and set it on fire to get back at the judge, who, by the way, wasn't even there. Or it was arson, and you're most likely suspect, again, in a non-profile case. I can tell you, arson investigators are immediately first person people they're going to look at are the homeowners themselves. They're going to be looking at how underwater on the mortgage are they. You can bet the insurance company is going to be looking at it, because they're the ones that are fixing to have to pay out well over $1 million for this house to these people. Regardless, I will be willing to bet that if whatever scenario turns out to be, and I can almost guarantee you it's probably not going to be the least likely scenario, which is the mad Trump supporter sneaking in and doing this, it'll just disappear. You just won't hear anything. So if you don't hear anything else about the story, you can assume that one of the other two scenarios is probably what wound up playing out. If on the off chance, because it's, you know, the chances aren't zero, the off chances this is politically motivated and a Trump supporter managed to pull this caper off, you're going to hear it from the rooftops. Guarantee it. So see, you can find out the truth eventually. If it just goes away and you don't hear anything about it, that's your answer. Moving on to our next story. October 7th. You know, we know what that day. It's a day that will live in infamy. We know, we've heard some of the stories of what Hamas did, the atrocious, horrific acts that Hamas perpetuated on the Israelis on October 7th. And I'll admit, I found some of these stories a little bit hard to accept. You know, that in the middle of a military operation, they stopped everything to line up and do mass rapes, decapitating babies and putting them in an oven and barbecuing them. Find those will let me, the skeptical side of me have found that a little bit hard to believe. And then you had the stories that they were, you know, the Hannibal directive was in play, and it turns out a lot of these Israelis that were killed were actually gunned down by the IDF, who had a don't let them take any hostages policy. But you have to admit when you're wrong. And now we have proof. You know, we have proof of some of this horrific stuff, so we're going to cover it in all fairness. Sickening acts Hamas terrorists were ordered to carry out on October 7th victims to create shocking scenes. Israel releases orders. Killers were given, including cutting off limbs and beheading. Hamas terrorists received top-level orders to commit sickening acts during the October 7th, 2023 attack on Israel, aimed at creating shocking scenes, including instructions to behead victims and cut off their limbs. The chilling directives have come to light in a series of documents released for the first time by Hamas. Oh, wait, no, it wasn't released by Hamas. I'm sorry. Let me back up. The chilling directives have come to light in a series of documents released for the first time by the Israeli Foreign Ministry ahead of. So our source for these documents is Israel. Okay. Never mind. Apology. Apology rescinded. I mean, come on. So Israel releases these documents and we're supposed to just accept this at face value. Like, how did they get these, by the way? Because some in before, oh, they probably intercepted email. No, some of these are handwritten and yet they have them. Maybe the guys carried these. Actually, they did. We're going to get to that, maybe. The merciless violence that day claimed 1,200 lives, many mainly civilians, and saw 250 others taken hostage in the single worst slaughter of Jews since the Holocaust. In an operation order for the massacre issued by the headquarters of the military wing of Hamas, the Izz-ad-Din al-Qassim Brigade, thousands of militants are instructed to expel the settlers using their vehicles. Priority is children and women, detained between 17 and 50 prisoners, seize mobile phones and any carried documents. An order for the attack codenamed Tufan al-Aqsa read. More instructions refer to the devastating attack on Israel's kibbutzim near the Gaza Strip, where entire communities were slaughtered and homes were ransacked and burnt to ashes. Now, I got to stop here and point out once again the documented fact that the Hannibal Directive, again, was implied, and the IDF, they have found that a lot of these Israelis were gunned down by friendly fire, as it were, because they just, basically, they were in helicopters just spraying. Attack kibbutz with the aim of inflicting maximum possible human losses, taking hostages, and establishing positions inside until further orders are issued, the mission description said. In sinister handwritten notes. Okay, here's the first problem. Handwritten notes. So, like, these guys couldn't just receive the orders verbally and go in and carry them out. Like, think about this. You're going to carry off this officer. You're getting your orders before carrying off the officer. I mean, what I just read here, if these were your orders, I could memorize that. You know, I could handle that. I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I wouldn't have to sit here and go, hold on, Muhammad. Let me take some notes here so I can carry them with me because I might forget to slaughter people and cut their limbs off. You know, that might slip my mind. You're ordering me to go in here and cut people's limbs off. So let me take some notes here and take them with me in case I forget. Commanders are instructed to ensure attackers produce shocking scenes. The directives called on terrorists to slaughter entire Israeli communities at the kibbutzim and the Gaza periphery, including women, children, and elderly. Let's stop here and ask, were there enough of them to do this? Did enough Hamas fighters come over in the paragliders to realistically carry out orders to slaughter an entire community? Because, I mean, you know, we've all seen some of the pictures and the footage. This thing has happened several years ago. You have to ask the logistical, if this was your aim, are you sending enough guys to carry this out? To slaughter whole communities? Because I have to question that. The plan calls for preparing spectacular attacks that will wipe out whole neighborhoods and kibbutzim, the instruction said. One example given is to pour gasoline or diesel from a special tanker, burn the site, and broadcast the images, breaching openings in the barrier gates. From a special tanker? Where did the special tanker come from? Because I know they didn't bring it on the paraglider. Yeah, I'm going to stop there because the rest of it is this is propaganda. This is part of Netanyahu's eighth front he was talking about recently. He's the eighth front of their war is propaganda war in the West, primarily in the U.S., but we're also getting this here from the Daily Mail. I mean, this is more of the eighth front propaganda. There's no confirmation any of this is legit. The source is not an unbiased source. And the idea that people were carrying around handwritten notes in case they forgot they're supposed to kill everybody. Does that make sense to you? It doesn't make sense to me. We're going to move on from there. Let's see here. What else are we going to do? Oh, well, we'll do this one. We've got some more implied anti-Semitism. Because why not? Harvard professor fires pellet gun near synagogue on eve of Yom Kippur, claiming to be hunting rats. Again, how do they get away with these insinuations? You know, we have fun on the show. I say things sometimes, I make light of things, and people can get offended at that, and that's okay. I mean, I get it. Not everybody, you know, like this story we just finished. It's obvious propaganda, and of course I'm making fun of it. I'm not making fun of people dying. I'm not doing anything, making light of people dying. But when something is obvious, stupid propaganda, I'm going to mock it and make fun, because it deserves to be mocked and made fun of. But I don't insinuate things in a manner, you know, to where you're trying to, like, I don't know, you know. In other words, I try to be truthful. I do. You could talk about things and point out things being ridiculous and have a few laughs or whatever. But I do always try to stick with the truth. You know, and if we don't know, like with the first story, I said, we don't know. I found with the information we have, there's your three most likely scenarios. You decide, you know, I'm not insinuating anything. I'm saying these are your three likely scenarios. You have to judge for yourself. You can't just jump to the conclusion, which the Daily Mail is trying to get you to do, that somehow Trump has something to do with burning the judge's house down. And here we have another story where they're doing the same thing. Harvard professor fires pellet gun near synagogue on eve of Yom Kippur, claiming to be hunting rats. So you're supposed to insinuate he's calling Jews rats here. And he was actually hunting them with a pellet gun? Right off the bat, got a question. A visiting professor at Harvard Law School was arrested and placed on administrative leave after allegedly firing a pellet gun near a synagogue before Yom Kippur. Did he even know there was a synagogue there? We're going to go through this story as much as we can, because I can't figure out what the synagogue has to do with anything. Carlos Portugal Gueva, 43, was arrested on Wednesday after he fired two shots from a pellet gun outside Temple Beth Zion on Beacon Street in Brookline, a town that borders Harvard University. Jeff Neal, a spokesperson for Harvard Law School, told the Daily Mail, Carlos Portugal Gueva has been placed on administrative leave as the school seeks to learn more about this matter. Gueva was charged in Brookline District Court with illegally discharging a pellet gun, disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace, and vandalizing property, according to court documents. I'm not seeing any hate crimes listed here. That's your first curious thing. They're listing the actual charges, and I don't see anything about a hate crime, because I'm pretty sure if he was targeting the synagogue, there would be some kind of hate crime, something stacked on here. Oh, wait. We got a very next line here. Investigators do not believe he was directly targeting the synagogue, but Guevara's actions drew an initial response from more than a dozen police officers. So we get down this far in the story and they admit that nobody thinks this has anything to do with the synagogue, then why the hell is this in the headline? Why is the Daily Mail going out of their way to make sure we know it was near a synagogue? It would be just as irrelevant. What else was he nearby? Was there a school nearby? That could be relevant. Just as relevant as the synagogue. What about a Catholic church? Maybe there was a Catholic church. So they admit here that the synagogue doesn't have a damn thing to do with the story. They literally admit it here. But it didn't stop them from their clickbait headline. I got to read that line again before we go on. Investigators don't believe he was directly targeting the synagogue. After his arrest, Gueva told police he was hunting rats, and he pleaded not guilty to all of his charges in court on Thursday. Now, they admit he has nothing to do with synagogue. Why are they mentioning the synagogue at all? What other buildings were in the neighborhood? Why aren't those relevant? The pellet shooting occurred on the eve of Yom Kippur. What the hell does that have to do with it? Which is the holiest day of the Jewish calendar. Two private security guards responded after hearing two loud shots. It's a pellet gun. You're not getting loud shots from a pellet gun, but whatever. And seeing Cueva down the street holding a pellet gun. After the guards approached him, Guevara set down the gun, but a brief physical struggle ensued as they attempted to detain the visiting professor. Yeah, because they're security guards. They're not the cops. I would have scuffled with them too. Once he realized, he put the gun down because he thought they were the cops, and then he realized they're just a couple of rental cops. They're just a couple security guards. And you got these security guards suddenly trying to tackle you and play cop. The police report about the incident says Guevara lunged toward the rifle, then ran into his residence a few doors down from the synagogue. Well, what else was there? I'm sure his neighbors were closer. There's apparently this entire neighborhood was one synagogue, because that's the only thing that gets mentioned in the story. They make it a point over and over and over to bring up the synagogue. They want you to think that has something to do with it, even though they themselves admit in the story that it has nothing to do with it. Let's see. Well, we got to consult the experts, so why not? Ricardo O., an exterminator with Best Pest Pro in New Jersey, told the Daily Mail that trying to kill the rats with a pellet gun is highly unorthodox and that he would never do it. Sometimes there are sick people who think it's okay to kill rats that way, he said. That's hunting or torture. You're not supposed to kill rats that way. That's inhumane. So how do you do it, Ricardo O.? If you're not, I mean, yeah, I'm not saying that's a very efficient way to do it. I'm sure Ricardo O., being an exterminator, has a more efficient way. Let's see, 99.999%, he's using poison to poison them to death. That's much more humane. Thank you, Ricardo O. And I just keep picturing this guy's neighborhood, and there's his house, and then the whole other block is one giant synagogue, because that's the only thing that gets mentioned in the entire story. Finally, I want to wrap up with some more science. Always get a kick out of the science here. And it's always fun. I have fun with the science. Mysterious interstellar visitor. It's an interstellar visitor now, you know. Spotted above Mars appears as massive cylindrical craft. Oh, this is going to be good. New extraordinary images of the interstellar object flying through our solar system has been released after its close pass by Mars. Yeah, something I find funny, because they're insinuating that this thing passing through our galaxy, our solar system, I'm sorry, could be a space alien craft from far, far away. If that's the case, this sumbitch sure is taking its time, isn't it? If this came from the, I don't know, galaxy Quintufar or whatever the hell, how long's it been traveling? 2 million years? Because at the rate, I've been hearing this thing's coming to Earth now for months. Taking their time. Although most scientists have concluded that the mysterious object is a comet, NASA's Perseverance rover on the Martian surface sent back photos showing what appears to be a massive cylindrical shape. Yes, the Martian rover. I'm sorry if y'all are going to disagree. We're going to have to agree to disagree here. But I laugh. I do not buy that there's any rover driving around on Mars. You can disagree. That's your prerogative. But I always find it hilarious when you look at the pictures of this thing with its wheels on it that looks like it was put together with parts from Harbor Freight. The thing looks like if I pushed it off my porch, which isn't real high, it would break. Like if you push that off the porch, it broke. But it flew through space and parachuted down and landed on Mars. And now it's beaming images back to us. Beaming them back in real time. Stargazers on social media revealed color-enhanced images. Yes, everything, it's always color-enhanced, enhanced, isn't it? Of the object dubbed 3-Eye Atlas, which showed the interstellar visitor, it's an interstellar visitor, appeared to also have a green glow as it passed Mars and heads closer to the sun. Harvard astrophysicist Avi Loeb, who has been convinced the object could be an extraterrestrial craft or probe, revealed a really slow one, by the way, revealed he was already asked to examine the new images by Florida Congresswoman Anna Paulina Luna. Let's see. According to his initial study of the brand new images, Loeb was not convinced 3I Atlas is actually a massive cylindrical object. Well, that's good. I agree. Noting that the strange shape might be a trick of the rover's camera stretching out its shape. The stripe in the NavCam image must have resulted from stacking hundreds of NavCam images over a total time interval of about 10 minutes, Loeb said in a statement on Sunday. The professor added that 3I Atlas is likely smaller and rounder, but still massive, with a potential diameter of more than 28 miles across. All of this stuff is coming straight out of these people's ass. I mean, you know that, right? No, it's likely this. It's likely that. Look, we got pictures from the Mars rover. Biophysicist. Yeah, hell yeah. We're going to talk about alien spacecraft hurtling through our galaxy. What better? The first person I'm going to go look for is a biophysicist. Biophysicist and researcher Dr. Horst Drew noted on social media that the mysterious green glow seen in some images could be the result of the object being an interstellar spacecraft coated in nickel. Or it could all just be CGI. Let's see, wonder what's more likely. Let's just go ahead and put it on the scale of likelihood that all of this shit is CGI or it's an interstellar spacecraft. What do you think is most likely? Just an honest answer. Dr. Drew explained that humans use the same practice on Earth-made space technology on a much smaller scale. It's not a comet, Drew declared on a post on Twitter Monday morning. Drew disagreed with Loeb's conclusion that the cylindrical shape was a result of a Mars rover sending back a stretched image over several minutes, claiming that an amateur astronomer on Earth captured a similar shape with their telescope. Look, if y'all believe in any of this, I apologize, but that's just dumb. I'm sorry, this is just stupid. All of it is just stupid. Alien probe. It's an alien craft. Sure, they really liking that. They really hyping all of that. It's the space aliens. I was thinking about it without getting too far in because we need to wrap up. But I was thinking recently about how they really hyping this alien shit. You know, they spent years saying no space alien, no space. And now all of a sudden they hyping it. Like 90% of this stuff coming about space aliens coming from government people. You know, you got the military, the Pentagon releasing these UFO images now, hyping the UFO nonsense. And I was thinking about the conditioning. You know, we've all spent years watching TV shows like Star Trek and movies and stuff. And your brain puts those in files. You're watching it. You know it's not real. You know it's fiction, but your brain sorts that stuff out and puts them in files. So when you get stories like this nonsense here, your brain tries to find something to relate it to, and it pulls those files up. All that, I believe, is part of this conditioning. So when they come out with this crap like this, you think it's real. You know, the Mars rover's down there driving around on his Harbor Freight wheels, beaming back images. You know, beaming back images to Earth. Never mind that the images it beams back of Mars pretty much looks like any, you know, quite a few places on Earth just with a red filter on it. It's totally real. We got space aliens coming any day now. How many billions of dollars get spent on this nonsense? I don't know. They are constantly trying to bedazzle us with bullshit. And it's important to look at it and laugh at it and remind ourselves not to take it seriously. All of this is bullshit. So yeah, we're gonna wrap up today's show with that humorous little line of BS. The Mars rover is a cylindrical object and we're going to be arguing over, no, this potential spacecraft isn't cylindrical, it's round. Just have AI gin you up a CGI generated image of whatever the hell you want it to be. And then just go with that. Because that's basically what That's basically what we're talking about. We're going to wrap up on that note. We'll be back tomorrow with the Parish of the Patriots program, which I think will be more interesting today than today's show, but I think we had a fun discussion today. I will be back tomorrow with Parish of the Patriots. That's done. It's just ready to go. Dr. Johnson will be here Wednesday. That's also done, ready to go. And as always, Dr. Johnson wraps up our week on Thursday with his installment of the Daily Nationalist. Hope you'll check that out as well. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. As always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.